Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our learning at Shaarei. It is Mamash Erev Yantif. I did not count Sfiras HaOmer yet, but we made it to the final countdown. It's Erev Yantif, Zman Matan Torasenu. We are learning Lilui Nishmasa and Lezeichu Nishmasa, Miriam Frod, Miriam Bas Chaim Yitzhak, Allah HaHashal, Meher Neshama, merit a continuous aliyah in the schus of this Torah learning. And the schus of her family's dedication to this Torah learning should be a schus for all of them, for the source tovos and only simchas. So I decided to prepare a special Shavuos shir, pre-Shavuos, instead of our sefer, just to take a 1 week break. I don't know that it's such a break really, because we're talking about the topic of Ahavas Hashem and dedication to God, clinging to God, loving Hashem. So it will relate to the topic of our shir, but it's not specifically in the sefer. I'm going to begin with a story that is told over by Rabbi Pesach Kron in his book, The Echoes of the Maggid. In 1965, Lazer Merilis, a 16-year-old boy from Zurich, Switzerland, came to Israel to learn in the great Panovich Yeshiva in Bnei Brak. When he arrived, he was told, this was in 1965, the yeshiva already had an enrollment of 1,000 students. New applicants were not being accepted for that zman. To Lazer, it was clear there was very little difference between 1,000 Talmidim and 1,001 Talmidim. Surely the reason for his rejection, he felt, was because his learning abilities were not up to par with those who had a stronger background. Torah study in the Swiss yeshivas was not as intense as in the yeshivos in Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak. Lazer asked if he could be taken to meet the Panovitcher Rebbetzin. The staff members smiled to themselves. The Rebbetzin had nothing to do with enrollment, but they pitied the youngster, who traveled thousands of miles only to be rejected. They complied with his wishes, and they took him to see Rebbetzin Hinda Kahneman. When he met her, Lazer took out a letter from his pocket, and he gave it to the Panovitcher Rebbetzin. She read it intently. She looked at the staff members, and she said to Lazer as well, "All of you come with me right away to see Rav Kahneman." Lazer Panovitcher Rosh Hashiva was Nifter in 1969. Astounded, they all followed her to the Rosh Hashiva. He greeted them with a radiant smile and pleasant words. The Rebbetzin told him that Lazer had come to Israel to learn in the yeshiva, and she gave the Rosh Hashiva the letter. The Rav read it. He hurried over to Lazer. He embraced him. He kissed him. And he said, "You will be accepted immediately into our yeshiva." The staff members were astonished. What could have been written in that letter? Over the next few years, the Panovitcher Rav himself told this story numerous times, and that is how it became known. When Lazer was a young child, his parents used to vacation every summer and winter in the Hotel Wengen, W-E-N-G-E-N, which was a popular Jewish resort. In the winter of 1955, the Panovitcher Rav underwent surgery to recuperate from the pressure of the yeshiva and the taxing stream of visitors. The doctor suggested he should go to Switzerland to recuperate from surgery. When Rav Kahneman and his Rebbetzin arrived, the hotel was filled almost to capacity. There was one room available. It was on the third floor. The Rav was in no condition to walk the stairs to the first floor shul on the dining room, up and down, up and down, up and down. The hotel owner, Mr. Pugach, wondered if there might be a guest room on the first floor, and maybe the Kahnemans could switch rooms with the first floor residents up to the third floor. That winter, Mrs. DeVar Merilis was at the hotel alone with her son, Lazer. Her husband was away on business. They were regular guests at the hotel, so the Merilis family was always assigned an exclusive room on the first floor. The owner perhaps hoped that Mrs. Merilis would agree to move up to the third floor for the sake of the Panovitcher Rav. Mr. Pugach walked to room 111. He knocked on the door. Mrs. Merilis opened it, and he said, "Mrs. Merilis, I am here to ask you for a very great favor. The Panovitcher Rav is here from Eretz Yisrael. He is recuperating from major surgery. It's hard for him to walk. Our only empty room is on the third floor. Would you mind giving up your room to the Rav and Rebbetzin on the first floor, and will you move to the third floor?" "I don't mind," said Mrs. Merilis, but she turned to her six years old son, and she said, "You have to ask this young gentleman as well. He has to be willing to give up his room." The owner smiled. He bent down to little Lazer and he said, "Young man, the Rosh Hashiva from Eretz Yisrael is here. He needs a room on the first floor. He just had surgery. Would you be willing to give him your room?" "We will give you a room on the third floor." The little boy said, "Of course, I am happy to give my room for the Rosh Hashiva." Mr. Pugach was overjoyed. A half an hour later, the Panovitcher Rebbetzin walked up to the third floor to visit Mrs. Merilis and little Lazer. Rosh Hashiva asked me to thank you for your room, she said. We are very, very grateful. When you come down to the first floor, the Rosh Hashiva wants to thank you in person. Don't thank me, said Mrs. Merlis. She pointed to her son. You have to thank the young man. He also gave up his room for the Rav and the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin smiled at the boy and she said, we thank you, young man. Can I buy you a piece of chocolate? There is a very nice shop on the first floor. No, thank you, said Laser. It's not necessary. Well, I'm going to town this afternoon. Can I get you a special toy? No, thank you. My parents have given me all the toys that I need. We would like to do something for you, said the Rebbetzin. What can we do? The little boy thought. He said, I just gave my bed to the Panovitcher Rav. I hope that if I ever come to the Panovitch Yeshiva when I grow up, the Rav will give me a bed. The Rebbetzin was stunned. What perception? She took out a sheet of paper and she wrote, if this boy ever comes to Panovitch in Bnei Brak, he will have a bed waiting for him in the yeshiva. She dated it. She signed it. She immediately went downstairs and had the Panovitcher Rav sign it as well. A few minutes later, the Rebbetzin returned to Mrs. Merlis. She handed the signed note to Laser. Mrs. Merlis took the paper, and when they returned home, she put it in the family safe. There it remained for more than 10 years. And when Laser was ready to study in Eretz Yisrael, she gave him the letter and she said, when you get to Panovitch, show this to the people there. You will not have a problem. That was the piece of paper that Laser gave the Rebbetzin after his initial rejection. Laser Merlis went on to learn in Panovitch for more than 10 years. I'm going to talk tonight about when we do a mitzvah, when we do a chesed, when we do an action, doing it with our full heart. How do we approach Torah? How do we approach mitzvahs? It's man matan Torah seinu. It's a time of Kabbalah Torah, the time of the giving of the Torah, the time of the receiving of the Torah. When we do something, how do we do it? Begrudgingly, half-heartedly. I'm going to begin our shiur in Perek Lamed Zayin of the book of Bereishis, chapter 37 of the book of Bereishis. Chapter 37, if you remember, Perek Lamed Zayin in the book of Bereishis is the story of the sale of Yosef. Yosef's mother, Rachel, is the beloved wife, but she dies in childbirth with Binyamin. Yosef is left orphaned of his mother. His brothers hate him. Nothing goes well for Yosef. Please close the door upstairs, Yonatan. Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Yaakov dwelled in the land of his father's sojourns. Yaakov finally comes home after 22 years away, and he thinks he's going to Vayeshev, because Yaakov leishev b'shalva. Yaakov thinks he's going to have, finally, some peace and quiet in the land of his father's sojourns. He's back in the Holy Land. And these are the offspring of Yaakov. Yosef was 17 years old. He was a shepherd with the flocks, with his brothers. He used to hang out with the sons of the Shvachos, Bilha and Zilpah, and that's because the sons of Leah hated him. Yosef would speak Lashon Hara about his brothers to father. Not only that, Yaakov loved Yosef from all the other sons. He was his son of his old age, and he made him Exonis Pasim, a special coat. It reflected Yaakov's special love. And the other brothers saw that father loved him from all the brothers. Vayisnu also, and they hated him. Velo yachlu darbo l'sham. They cannot speak peacefully one another. The brothers to Yosef, mad to make it even worse. Yosef is having dreams, and he tells his brothers, and they continue to hate him. And he said, listen to the dream that I dreamt. You're not going to believe what happened. We were binding sheaves in the field, and my sheaf got up, and it was upright, and all of you surrounded me, and all your sheaves bent down to my sheaf. And they say to him, are you going to be king over us? Hamloch timloch aleinu? Imashol timshal banu? Are you going to be ruler over us? And they continue to hate him for his dreams and for his words. And then he had another dream. And he told that to his brothers. He said, listen to this. I had another dream. Rav Salvechik says, just to point out here as a side point, that these were nevuos. His dreams were prophecies. And a prophet is not allowed to, says Rav Salvechik, contain, or what's the right word that I'm looking for? A prophet is not allowed to capture, not tell. If anyone was suggesting, you're welcome to type it over here. A prophet is not allowed to hold back or hold in his prophecy. So if Salvechik said, it wasn't that he wanted to get himself in trouble, it wasn't that he wants to cause more family machlokas, but you're not allowed to capture your prophecy. Withhold, I think that's better. Thank you very, very much. A prophet, says the Rav, is not allowed to withhold God, thank you. His prophecy, he wasn't trying to make things worse. He has another dream. He says, you're not going to believe this dream. I had another dream. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars are all bowing down to me. And he tells his brother, and he tells his father, and his father chastised him. And he said to him, what is this dream that you're dreaming? Do you think me and your mother, just like your mother's dead, and she can't bow down to you? What are you dreaming? We're all going to come bow down to you? So they can't speak to him in peace, and they hate him, and now they're jealous of him. And his father guarded the matter. His brothers go to pasture the flocks in Shechem, and who should Yaakov send to check on the brothers? There's no WhatsApp, there's no Zoom, there's no iMessage, there's no Twitter. Who does he send to check on the brothers in Shechem? Yosef. This is the beginning of Galus Mitzrayim. Very beginning of Galus Mitzrayim. He sends Yosef, and Yosef finds a man in the field, and the man says to him, where are you going? I'm going to look for my brothers. And the man says, they left, they went to Dasson. Vayiru also Meirachok. They see him from afar. Ubeterem yikrav aleihem, vayisnaklu oso lahamisa. Before he could even get close, they plot to kill him. Vayomru ish alachiv, each man says to his brother, hine baal hachalamos halazaba. Look who's coming. Here comes the master of dreams. And they come up with a plan. Ba'ata, and now, luchu v'nahar genu, come, let us kill him. V'nashlichehu ba'achar haboros, let us throw him into one of the pits. Va'amarnu, and we will say, chaya ra'a achalosuhu, a wild animal, consumed him. They're finally going to get rid of their brother. They don't recognize the beauty, says Rav Salvechik, of hini matuhu manayim shavas achim gam yachar. Behold how beautiful, how pleasant it is when brothers sit together. The Rav says, when did they appreciate Yosef? When did they appreciate the gift of brotherhood? When did they appreciate hine ma tovu manayim, how good and how pleasant it is, shavas achim gam yachad, when brothers dwell together? The minute, says the Rav, the caravan disappeared over the horizon, carrying Yosef to Egypt. They realized he wasn't so bad. But by then it was too late. The Rav says Hashem is a printable. Just a side point to the topic of our shir. The Rav says Hashem is a printable. You don't like it, no problem. Give it back. You don't like it, give it back. You don't like Yosef, no problem. Give it back. You don't like Eretz Yisrael, said to him, Ragam, no problem. Give it back. Strong Mr. Hakel, Mr. Haskell, mind for you, for me. You don't appreciate it, so Hashem says, no problem. Give it back. Either they appreciate the beauty of Yosef and brothers sitting together the minute the caravan disappeared over the horizon. They all get up to comfort father. What about before? Now you're comforting father? And you're going back to the story. So the brothers say, let's kill him. We'll throw him into a pit. We'll say a wild animal devoured him. Let's see what will become of these dreams. Vayishma Reuven, vayatzilehu miyadam. That's a very interesting statement. Vayishma Reuven, vayatzilehu miyadam. Why is that such an interesting statement? What does that actually literally mean? Reuven heard, and he saved him from their hands. What's the problem with that statement? He did not save Yosef. Vayomer, and he said, Lo nakenu nafesh. We're not going to kill him. Vayomer leim Reuven, and Reuven says, Al tishpichu dam, hashlichu oso el habar hazad. Don't spill his blood. Throw him into the pit that's in the desert. Don't cast your hand against him. Laman hatzil oso miyadam lahashivo el aviv. He wants to save him, to return him to father. So two times it tells me the words Hatzalah, like organization Hatzalah. Vayatzi lehu miyadam. Reuven saves Yosef from their hands, which is a very interesting statement because he in fact does not. I know you could say on the pshat they wanted to kill him. They don't kill him because of Reuven's initial suggestion, but I don't think that you could say Reuven saved him. Furthermore, laman hatzil also miyadam lahashivo el aviv. Reuven plans that after they throw him in the pit, he's going to come back. He'll take him out. He'll carry him home to father. And it was, Yosef comes to his brothers. They strip him of his cloak, this special cloak that is upon him. They throw him into the pit. They sit down and they have a meal. They see Yishma'elim. They see Sochrim. They see lots of people. It's a trade route. There's a lot of people going by. It's very, very interesting, just as a side point as well, who actually sold Yosef. It's not so clear if it's the brothers who sold him, if it's the Midianim who sold him, if it's the Sochrim who sold him. If you look at the Lashon of the Pesukim, it's very, very ambiguous as to who actually sold Yosef. Somebody sells Yosef to the Ishmaelim for 20 silver kesef. They bring Yosef to Egypt. Vayashav Reuven el habar. Reuven returns to the pit. Vihine ein Yosef babar. Yosef is not in the pit. Vayikra es begadav. Reuven tears kriya. And he returns to his brothers and he says, the boy is not here. What am I supposed to do now? Where am I supposed to go? Where was Reuven? So Rashi says one of two things. He was either, it was his turn to serve his father that day. Yaakov was the gadol dor, and one of his children was always his shamis, serving him. So it was Reuven's turn to be serving father. So at the time of the actual sale, he was not there. Or he was busy with sackcloth and fasting because he mixed up his father's bed from Bilhah's tent. He moved father's bed from Bilhah's tent back to Leah's tent after Rachel died. Whatever the case, Reuven was not there at the time of the sale of Yosef. He comes back, he tears Kriya, and he says, what am I supposed to do now? This is case number one. Case number two. I don't know my Shemos in front of me either. Oive. Case number two is in the book of Shemos. So I just want to quote the psukim for you. Oh, case number two is in the book of Shemot. So in the book of Shemot, could you still see me? I'm going to a different web page because I don't have my Shemot in front of me. I'm coming back in 1 second. Wait, where are you all? Were you able to still see me? Yeah, okay, but I got for a second. Okay, thank you very much. Yes, okay, good. So case, I know not everyone likes to be on camera, and I respect that and I appreciate that, but it's helpful that some of you at least like to be because it gives me feedback that I'm able to see you. So if I ask a question and you say yes, very good. Okay, so case number two that I want to discuss is also in Chumash. It's from Sefer Shemos, specifically Parsha Shemos. It begins in Perek Gimel through Perek Daler, Pasuk Yod Dal. So beginning in chapter 3, this is actually relevant to Matan Torah because Moshe was the Ro Etzon Yisro Chosno Vayinaheg Etason Achar Midbar Per Gimel Pasuk Aleph. Moshe is the shepherd for the flocks of Yisro, his father-in-law, and he leads the sheep into the desert. And when you believe it, Har Elokim Choreva. Okay, so Matan Torah, which occurred for the masses, which we celebrate on Zman Matan Torah Seinu, actually occurred in a microcosm for Moshe. Moshe meets God at Har Chorev. Just like there was fire and smoke on Matan Torah, look up Perek Yitas and Shmos, so there was smoke on Har Halokim Chareva in this personal revelation for Moshe. It's very, very interesting that Moshe had a personal revelation on Har Halokim Chareva, on Har Sinai, before the national revelation on Har Sinai. There was fire by Har Sinai Matan Torah, there was fire in Moshe went there. The first thing Hashem said to us at Har Sinai is Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The first thing Hashem said to Moshe at the burning bush is also Anochi. I just want to quote it for you properly. Hashem said to him, Anochi Elokei Avicha, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. So Moshe also had this revelation of Anochi. Just like the Bnei Yisrael had a revelation of Anochi. So Hashem says to Moshe, I'm sending you on a mission. You're going to free the Jews. And Moshe, thank you very much. Rashi tells us seven days. Imagine trying to ask your child or tell your child to do something, and it's bad enough if they say no 3, 4, 5, 6 times. 7 days, no because of this, and no because of that, and I'm God, and what are you telling me? You can't go. So Moshe says, Heim lo ya'aminu li v'lo yishmu b'koli ki yamu lo ne ra'eh eilach Hashem. He gives a whole reason, number of reasons why he can't go. One of them is, the Bnei Yisrael won't believe in me. They won't listen to my voice. They will say, God did not appear to you. Then it's Siv. And his Emek Davar, just as an aside, has an unbelievable piece. And it's even his Emek Davar says something so geschmack. Moshe says, Heim lo ya'aminu li. They won't believe in me. V'lo yishmu b'koli. They will not listen to my voice. Ki yamru, they will say, lo nira elach Hashem. So we typically think that that means the Bnei Yisrael won't believe the Redeemers here. But the Netziv, the Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, Zetzal, has a very insightful way of interpreting Chumash. And he says something very, very different. I have the Emek Davar set upstairs, Baruch Hashem. And he says, Moshe was saying, the people are going to say when Moshe shows up at the scene, you're the Redeemer? Look at you. You look like a Midianite. You're wearing Midianite robes. You speak a Midianite language. Where's the black hat we imagine Mashiach wears? Where's the beard Mashiach should have? The Netziv doesn't exactly write that. Where's the kapata? Where's the bekesha? Where's the upturn? Where's the downturn? Where's the kipasuga? Where's the nachman payas? The nachman kippa? And this one says, I thought you were a top hat. And this one says, I thought you were a danner. And this one says, I thought you were a gartel. And this one says, I thought you didn't wear a gartel. Heim lo ya'aminu li. They won't believe that I, Moshe, who look like a Midianite, am the Redeemer. V'lo yishmu b'ko li. They have a whole different image of what they think Mashiach should look like. And it's not me, Moshe. Ki yomru, they will say, lo nira eilecha, Hashem. The problem is going to be with me, Moshe. And the Netziv says, in every generation, yeah, what could be the Redeemer? Rechmana Litzlan, he shows up and we say, you, you're the Redeemer? You're so holy? God chose you? Are you kidding? You look laughing like me, Elshkafigli. Something to keep in mind. Unbelievable. Lo nirai lach Hashem. Okay, so the first thing he says is, I can't go, the pshat he spoke, Lashon Hara, whatever. Next excuse. I have a speech impediment. Ki lo ish devarim anochi gam mitmol, gam shoshan, ki kvad pel, kvad lashon anochi. I can't go. I'm not a powerful orator. You want someone who can wow the crowds with their words. Maybe someone who went to speech school or rabbinic school or had training as a public speaker. Me? I have a speech impediment from when Parah put out the coals. I touched the coals. I put it in my mouth. I can't speak. I couldn't speak yesterday. I couldn't speak today. I can't speak tomorrow. I'm not a man of words. So why do you want me? Take someone else who's a better orator. Just as an aside, since we keep adding side points, how powerfully poignant it is that the final book of Torah begins with Ela HaDvarim Asher Diber Moshe. I'll call Yisrael. Ela HaDvarim. The 40-day soliloquy of Moshe, who is not the man of words, who composed one of the most beautiful books of Chumash that we have. A person has to find their kochos. So Hashem says, don't worry, who makes a man mute, who makes a man pikeach, open eyes, iver, blind, who gives a man speech, is it not me, Hashem? If I said you can go, then you could go. Another excuse Moshe gives. Shlachna biyad tishchach. Okay, it didn't work to blame the Jews. It didn't work to say I have a speech impediment. I have another idea. You should send Aaron. According to the Ramban, Nachmanides, to Shemos 2:23, Moshe was out of Egypt for 60 years. 6-0. The Ramban said he was running from Medina to Medina, from Malchus to Malchus, province to province, kingdom to kingdom. After he smote the Egyptian, he had to run away. He was gone for 60 years. He's 80 years old at this point. At least, says the Ramban, 60 years. He ran away when he was 20. He has nothing to do with the Jews in Egypt. From the time he's 20, he's 60, he's 80 years old. What does he know about the Jews in Egypt? But who's always been in Egypt with the Jews? Oh, his older brother, Aaron, who's 3 years older than him, who would be 83 at this point in the narrative. Why do you send Aaron? Why are you sending me? He's been there. He's been seeing their suffering. He's been consoling them. He's been mechazik them. How could you skip over Aaron? Lahavdil, 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 alfei hevdalos. You know, lahavdia, just to illustrate what we're talking about here, a person puts their all into a certain company and they work and they sweat and they go overtime. And then it comes time for a promotion and the newbie on the job who hasn't even been here gets a promotion to manager. You don't get a raise, you don't get a promotion, you get no recognition, you get no stock options, you don't get a bonus at the holiday time. I've been working here for 20 years. This kid just showed up on the scene. He's the manager. That's not what Aaron thought. But that's what Moshe was suggesting. Lahavdil of Alfei Hevdalos. Please, I'm just using it as an illustrative example. So Moshe said, don't send me. Who should you send? You should send Aaron. He's been there this whole time. With the people. Mechazek the people. Seeing the people. Sweating alongside them. He should see. Remember, I was once having an in-depth conversation. How it came to be is an interesting story. That's not for now. With the daughter-in-law of the Vishnitzer. Rabbi Yisrael Hager, Shlita from Bnei Brak's daughter-in-law. And she told me the whole day. Her father-in-law Shlita sits and he hears people's problems. She says, who do you think comes to the Rebbe? A whole line of people who need brachos. A personal conversation. I came to know her in a very unique and interesting way. We spent a Shabbos together. It was very, 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 very interesting. But she said, who do you think comes to the Rebbe the whole day? Shivchi kamayim libech. They come crying. They come pouring. They need etzos. They need brachos. They need tzedakah. They need help. She says, the whole day he hears about people's sorrows. So Moshe was saying, what are you sending me? I have nothing to do with these people. I'm the newbie on the job. Shlach na biya tishlach. You should send the one you're accustomed to sending. Send Aaron. Hashem does not like this anymore. 7 days, Moshe stopped. And Hashem says, and I'm just going to quote the exact pasuk because I want to make sure that I don't make a mistake. Vayichar af Hashem b'Moshe. Hashem becomes very angry at Moshe. Vayomer, and he says, hello, Aaron achicha ha-Levi. Behold, Aaron, your brother, the Levi. Why is he called Levi? Interesting question. Rashi addresses it. Yadati ki yadab, ki daber yadaber hu. I know Aaron will speak for you. So you're worried you have a speech impediment. Aaron will speak for you. You're worried about Aaron being passed over. V'gam hinehu yotzei lekrasecha v'ra'acha v'samach bilibo. He will come out to greet you when you come back. back, he'll give you a shalom aleichem, he'll be so happy to see you. Rashi says, v'ra'ach v'samach b'libo. Since Aaron was happy in his heart, he was zocha to wear the adi hachoshen, the stones of the breastplate that the Kohen Gadol wore, because he was happy for his brother Moshe, who got the promotion over him, so to speak, who was going to be the leader, Moshe Rabbeinu. What was the whole purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim? What did God say to Moshe at his personal revelation? Tachas asher ta'avdun et ha'elokim al ha'har hazeh. God said, you're bringing them to this mountain. Moshe said, what should I say when they said, who sent you? How will I know? God says, this will be for you the sign. You know what's the sign? You're going to lead them from Egypt back to this mountain. Har elokim chareva. Chareva, another word for Harsinai. And you're going to worship me on this mountain. That's Matan Torah. Aaron's not going to be upset you got the promotion. He's not going to be upset you're Rabbeinu. Because he was v'ra'acha v'samach bilibo, he will see you when you come back to Egypt. And he will rejoice in his heart for you. Aaron was zocha to the adi, ayin dalid yur, the tachshite hachoshen, the jewels of the breastplate, because he was happy for his brother. These are two narratives that we are told different places in Chumash that I'm going to come back to. Plus, we gave a lot of insights along the way. Given the time frame, I would say it's a lot of insights related to these narratives. I started this year with a very moving story that was told by the Panovich Rav himself, Zatzal, Rav Karneman. Panovich still flies, I'm sure you're aware of this, the Israeli flag over the yeshiva on Yom Ha'atzmut, a custom that began with Rav Karneman, Zecher Tzaddik Kadosh Livracha, was a survivor. So we started a story with a boy who gave his room with his whole heart. And he was rewarded. Panovich Rav gave him a bed in the yeshiva with his whole heart. We have to ask ourselves, when we do things in life for other people, when we do things in life for the Ribono Shel Olam, so to speak, if he needs our things done for him, how do we do them? How do we do them? Like laser mirrorless? I have to do it again. Think of a child. There's two ways that we do things when we're children, when our parents ask us to do things. Either with Zrizus and we run to help, or with a sigh. We do it, but with a sigh. If you've never experienced this, let me tell you, it happens. I'm the best of children. I'm sure when I was a child, I did the same thing. I don't know. I don't remember. But I'm sure I did the same thing. Sometimes your parents ask you to do something, and you run with Zrizus. You're happy to help. And sometimes you go, you do it, but you're not so happy you did it. Rav Gigi once recounted in the early days of the yeshiva, yeshiva at Har Tzion, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal used to play basketball with the Talmidim. And he always made sure to run up and down the court. He used to chastise the boys who waited under the basket. And he would say, they weren't putting forth their full effort. If you're playing basketball, so play basketball. And if you're cooking in the kitchen, so cook in the kitchen. And if you're involved in a chesed, so be involved in the chesed. Hashem told Moshe at the time in Matan Torah and Parshas Mishpatim, Alei Eli Hahara Veheyesham, come up to me to the mountain and you shall be there. So what do you mean you shall be there? Of course you're going to be there. Alei Eli Hahara Veheyesham, if you're going up to the mountain, you're already going to be there. So there's a famous, I don't remember, it could be the Kotzka, because it sounds like the Kotzka, I did not make this up, but I don't remember which Rabbi said it. Alei Eli Hahara Veheyesham, God said to Moshe at the time of Matan Torah, you could come up to the mountain two ways. You could approach anything in life in one of two ways. You could do it, because you know you have to do it, and there's consequences if you don't, but you sigh, you're not really there, your mind's distracted, or you could be in the moment. Alei Eli Hahara, come up to me to the mountain, Veheyesham, put your whole self into what you're doing now. And if you're playing basketball, said Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, then play basketball. Don't stand under the net. My daughter taught me. She learned in TMM. I think it was in the beginning of the year. They learned Pirkei Avos. So she's in 11th grade. Can I know her? So what does it mean when Chazal say, Ehov es hamalacha, usna es harabanus? That's a different pshat. I heard Rav Shai Shechter give a beautiful shir on that. What does it mean, Ehov es hamalacha, usna es harabanus? What did my daughter say? What does it mean, Ehov es hamalacha? Teacher told the girls, what does it mean, love work? That if you have to do it with love. If you have to work at something, so put your whole self into it. Do it well. So sometimes when the kids complain about something that they have to do, I remind them of it. I'm really reminding myself. If I have to do this, so enjoy what you're doing. And make sure you do it well. God put man into the Garden of Eden. Yeah, on the one hand, you're in the Garden of Eden, but on the other hand, it's La'avda. L'shama, it's to work, it's to guard. Avraham Lichtenstein is such a beautiful piece where he says people think that work is a curse. Work is not a curse. We were put into the garden, ba'abda, to work. Man wants to be productive. And if you're going to be productive, alei elai ha'hara deheyesham. So be in the moment. Do the best you can to do whatever it is you're doing. Which brings us a little bit all over tonight, different places in Chumash, many different insights, quoting many different Poskim Gedolim, Gedolei Torah, which brings us to, with all of these insights, can I hear Megillas Rus? I'm going to share one insight. I just finished teaching a 7-hour, Mamesh, one of the people here was in that class, 7-hour series on Megillas Rus. Baruch Hashem, it was, wow. I could never look at this Megillah the same again. The Sefer of Navi again, part of Navim and Ksuvim, of course. But it was in the days of the judges, and there was a famine in the land. Don't worry, I'm not going to keep you for 7 hours. And there was a famine in the land. And a man from Beis Lechem Yehuda, I'm telling you, very pshat, basic story. A man from Beis Lechem Yehuda, why am I doing this? By the way, I hope everyone understands what we're doing here. Megillas Rus is the Megillah that is associated and is read on the Yom Tov of Shavuos. Okay. So a man from Beis Lechem Yehuda went to dwell in the fields of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Who was this man? His name was Elimelech. Rashi tells us he was the Parnes Hador. He was the sustainer of the generation. He was Ashir Haya v'Godol Haya. He was rich. He was a man of renown. He was very wealthy. His name was Elimelech. His wife was Naomi. They have two sons, Machlon and Kilion. Everything is great, but there's a famine in the land. So they leave Beis Lechem Yehuda and they go down to Egypt. Now, didn't Avraham Avinu go down to Egypt? What is so bad about him going down to Egypt? He left because he didn't want to give tzedakah in a time of famine. He didn't want to give tzedakah. He felt everything he has is for him. He can't stand that people are going to be lining up from morning to night waiting for handouts. So he leaves Beis Lechem Yehuda to go to the fields of Moab to survive the famine. Well, that didn't go over so well for him because God punished him for leaving. Elimelech died. Rus, Naomi is left alone with her two sons. They marry Moabi women. Machlon marries Rus. Kilion marries Orpah. They are now married to two Moabi girls. How great was Elimelech? The commentators say he was so great that Eglon, the king of Moab, wanted to be Meshadech with him. Rus is a daughter of Eglon, the king of Moab. Her father wants to be Meshadech with Elimelech. That's how great Elimelech is. They lived there for 10 years. The widow Naomi, Machlon and Kilion, married to Rus and Orpah respectively. After about 10 years, and this is something Rav Salvechik speaks about on Chumash, and I've repeated it many times, that we think that the stories in Tanakh happen one after another because the psukim are written right after another. Okay, there's a gap of 10 years between one pasuk in the beginning of paragraph and another pasuk. The story does not happen in 5 seconds. Okay, after 10 years, Machlon and Kilion died. So who is left? Who's left? Naomi with two Moabi daughters-in-law. That's what she has. She had a wealthy husband who was the Parnes Hador. She had two strapping sons. They had flocks. Everything was great. All three of her men die. She's left with two not Jewish women. That's a pretty big fall. Okay, they hear that there is food in Beis Lechem Yehuda. Naomi says she's going back home. And the girls are going to come with her, and then they're not going to come with her, and then they are going to come with her. Finally, Orpah goes back to her mother's home. She goes back to her ways in Moab. Rus davkaba. Rus clings to her mother Naomi. She goes back with her to Beis Lechem Yehuda. Many reasons why we read Rus on Shavuos. One of them is it's the birth. It tells us about the lineage, the yichus, if you will, of David Melech Yisrael, the end of the story. Of course, Rus and Boaz have Oved, who has Yishai, who has David Melech Yisrael. So they're the great-grandparents. Rus is the great-grandmother of David. David was born on Shavuos, and he died on Shavuos. One reason. Another reason, it's a story of chesed. Rus does tremendous chesed by not abandoning her mother. Now, and we have to know that there is no Torah without chesed. If a person does not want to be a Baal chesed, but they want to learn Torah, they're missing half the Torah, and Hashem's not interested. Another reason, it's a story of a righteous convert. At the time in Matan Torah, we were all converts. We all converted to accept the Torah upon ourselves. There was a man Masgeiros, if you will, at the time of Matan Torah. Another reason why we read the story. She converted to come to Torah. At Matan Torah, we converted also to come to Torah. One more reason, it's the time of the barley harvest. We are counting. Sfiras HaOmer is counting the time period from the barley harvest until the wheat harvest. So we just gave four reasons why this is read. Okay, so where are we up to in the story? Naomi goes back with her mother-in-law to Beis Lachem Yehuda, and the whole city is astonished. Hazo Naomi, this is a woman who left 15 years ago, rich, a name in society, the beauty of society. Her husband was the gavir in town. She had two sons. She comes back destitute, like a shmata, with nothing to her name except a non-Jewish daughter-in-law. She says, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. God did very bad to me. God dealt with me very bitterly. I went full and I returned empty. Don't call me Naomi. Okay. Perek Beis. That was Perek Alpha Rega Achas. Naomi has a relative through her husband. He was a strapping man. His name was Boaz. Boaz was Elimelech's nephew. Okay, you want to hear the family? There was Nachshon ben Aminadav. It's helpful if you write this down or if you could somehow envision it in your head. Nachshon ben Aminadav, the famous Kafatz Layam Tchila, so to 37a, the one who jumps into the sea first. Nachshon ben Aminadav has four sons. Their names are Ploni Almoni, John Doe, a.k.a. Tov, Salmon, as in English you would write salmon, not to make a joke if we don't, not familiar with the Hebrew, Salmon, who was the father of Elimelech, the father of Boaz. He has four sons, Nachshon. Ploni Almoni, also known as Tov, Elimelech, who dies, Salmon, the father of Boaz. So Boaz and Elimelech were nephew and uncle. And one more, we don't know his name, but he was the father of Naomi. So Naomi and Boaz were first cousins, their fathers were brothers, and Naomi and Elimelech, her husband, were niece and uncle. Not so uncommon. Nechama Leibowitz, more recently in our times, married her uncle. Nachshon ben Aminadab has four sons. Ploni Almoni, a.k.a. Tov. Salmon, father of Boaz. Elimelech, who has died, and left behind a widow, and the father of Naomi. So Naomi is a granddaughter to Nachshon ben Aminadav and a daughter-in-law. Interesting. Okay. So Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, well, listen, there's a man whose name is Boaz from our family. We just went through the family tree. Go do leket. Go glean in his fields. She goes to glean in the fields, and Boaz is very nice to her. And he says, don't go to any other fields. Stay here. And if you're thirsty, you could have a drink of water. Please don't leave my fields. We will take care of you. She says, why are you being so nice to me? He says, you did such chesed for your mother-in-law. You left your birthplace and your homeland. Okay. Time for a break in the gleanings, in the harvesting. Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Dalet. The I that we spoke about from the letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I love that. What is that a reference to? Someone commented, the I remember that letter. I need, I want, I have, I feel. Why is my business failing? The Lubavitcher Rebbe took a red pen. He circled the I at the beginning of every sentence. Chana Foxman sent me that and I've told it over. I just don't know Moshe. Moshe what? I should understand what the comment is in regard to in Shira. Moshe was saying, I'm not worthy, so therefore, I don't even know who I'm talking to. It just says iPhone. Moshe was saying, I'm not worthy. I was away from the beginning. So what was Hashem saying? Take away your eye? Is that what you're saying? Take away your eye? Okay, I'm going to come back after. 2:14, okay? So Boaz says at the time of the meal, the harvesters take a break from harvesting. She says to Rus, who is gleaning in his fields, this poor Moabite girl, literally poor. I don't mean like, oh, you poor girl. They're destitute. Come, sit down. Have some bread. Dip your pita in vinegar. She sits on the side. Vayitzpat la kali. He gives her some parched grain. So wonderful Boaz is doing an unbelievable chesed. What's the chesed? He gives this poor girl some parched grain. Have some dry toast. Have some popcorn, have some parched grain, you must be hungry. She eats, she is satiated, she doesn't have high expectations, she leaves him over, she's going to take the leftover home to her mother-in-law. Good. Listen to the Medrash. The Medrash says, Vayitzbat la kali. Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Oh, you know how we could remember that? Because the Pasuk about Aaron is Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud Dalet in Shabbos, and this is Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Dalet. They're both Perek Yud Dalet. Reuven's is not. Doesn't fit. Okay. Vayitzbat la kali. He gives her some parched grain. Okay, that's a nice thought. Moshe was too concerned. Me. Hashem is saying this isn't about you. This is about me, God, and the Bnei Yisrael. Very nice. Very nice. Thank you. Vayitzbat la kali. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Marion. Rabbi Yitzchak, I mean, Medrash Rus Rabba, hey, Vav, 5-6. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Marion said, Baha kasuv lulam decha. The Torah is coming to teach you. The Nach, the scriptures are coming to teach you. Shem Adam osa mitzvah, ya'asena belevav shalim. The Pesukim are coming to teach you that when a man does a mitzvah, a person does a mitzvah, he should do it with his whole heart. She'ilu haya Reuven, and that's why I started in depth in Paraglam Medzayin with added insights. Had Reuven she'ilu haya yoder Reuven, that if Reuven would have known, she'akosh baruch hu machtiv alav vayishma Reuven vayatzilei miadam, if Reuven would have known that the Torah would have recorded forever and ever, l'chai olamim. Rambam says in the time of Mashiach, all of Nach will be obliterated, except for the Chamisha Chumshei Torah Megillas Esther, which is part of a Purim Shir. But these books will never go away. Had Reuven only known that Hashem would have written about him, in order to save him, he carried him home to father. Bichtefo haya molichol eitzel aviv. Reuven would not have dropped the ball. Reuven would not have fumbled and mumbled and left and come back and he's not here. I'm tearing kriya. Reuven would have said, stop. I'm putting the boy on my shoulders and carrying him home. Reuven was the bechor. He had a responsibility. The kasuv is coming to teach you that if a person does a mitzvah, ya'asena b'chol leiv, had Reuven would have known what the Torah was going to write about him, he would have carried Yosef home on his shoulders. And if Aaron would only have known that God was going to write about him, behold, he is coming out to meet you. Aaron went out, he gave him a shalom aleichem, he shook his hand, he gave him a kiss maybe after 60 years. I'm so happy to see you. If he would have known that Hashem would have said about Aaron, how would Aaron have gone out? Bitupim. Uvim Cholos, it's a paraphrase of Miriam by Shira Sayam, 520 by the woman. 1520. Bitupum Uvim Cholos Haya Yotse the Krasso. Aaron would have gone out with a parade, with tambourines, with dances, not with a Shalom Aleichem only. I understand. We're talking about the Shiftei Ka. I actually don't understand what that even means. And I know we're talking about Aaron and Moshe. So we're less than an ant compared to a giant. I am less than an ant compared to a giant. But the Medrash is trying to teach us something. Ve'ilu haya yodeya boaz. Sheach kosh baruch hu machtiv ala vayitzbat la kali. Batochal vatispa vatosar. If Boaz would have known that Hashem was going to write about him, he gave her some parched grain. Agalos mifutamos. Hayam achila. He would have given her fattened calves. Have a steak. Have a piece of sea bass and lemon sauce with creamed spinach and roasted potatoes and fingerling on the side. And then we give you some chocolate mousse with strawberry mousse on top. Have some parched grain. You must be hungry. Here's a piece of dry pita. Lolamdecha. Kusha Adam osa mitzvah. Ya'asana b'chol leiv. Had Reuven only would known what we would be learning today, by Yatzileim Yadam, you didn't save him. He would have carried his brother home on the shoulders. Had Aaron only have known, the Torah said, he'll come out to meet you, he'll be happy in his heart. He would have made a parade. And had Boaz only have known that when we learn this story of Rus, we will read, he gave her some parched grain. He would have given her a gourmet meal to this poor woman who was hungry. So today, you could think there's no more scriptures. Canon is closed. Tanakh has 24 books, and I'm not getting in. But nevertheless, we told in Pirkei Avos, I believe it's right in the beginning of Perek Beis, Da Malam Malam Imcha, Ayin Roa, Ozen Shamas, V'chol Masecha, B'Sefer Nichtavim. So I'm going to tell you Geshmak Pshat of that Mishnah that Rabbi Tzungulub told over a few weeks ago in Pirkei Avos, you're quoting Rav Chaim of Elazhen. Rav Chaim of Elazhen says, what does it mean? Da Malam Malam Imcha, Ayin Roa, Ozen Shamas, V'chol Masecha, B'Sefer Nichtavim. Well, Rav Chaim of Elazhen says, this is a journey through history. Ayin Roa. It used to be that there was Nivuah, that people could see Kaviyachol God. So everything was very clear to them. They saw Hashem. And then after the time period of Nivuah, there was still Baskol. Very often in the Gemara, you read about this idea of Baskol. Ozen Shamas. They could still hear the voice of Hashem. But today, we don't have Ayin Roa. We have no eye that sees God. Ozen Shamas, we have no ear that hears a Baskol. So what is our guiding light today? Chol Ma'asecha B'Sefer Nichtavim. The only guide we have today is Torah. All of the ways we should act are written B'Sefer in our Holy Torah. If we turn to the Torah HaKadosha as our guide, we will never go wrong. It's true we don't have Ayin Roa. We don't have an eye today that sees Ribono Shel. It's true we don't have Ozen Shamas. We can't hear a Baskol today. So what do we have, says Rav Chaim of Elazhener? The Torah. If we understand that everything, how we have to act, how we have to do, how we have to speak, is written in our Torah, will never go wrong. So what do we learn from these things? What about today? The Midrash continues and says, L'sha'avar haya adam osa mitzvah v'hanavi kosva. In the past, a person would do a mitzvah and the Navi would write it down. What about today? Achshav k'sha'adam osa mitzvah mi kosva. But today, when a person does a mitzvah, when a person does a good deed, who writes it down? Does anybody even care what I'm doing if I do something good? Who writes it down? Says the Midrash, Eliyahu Kosva, Umelech HaMashiach. You know who writes it down? Eliyahu and Melech HaMashiach. Every good deed we do, every mitzvah that you do, b'chol lev, every chesed that we do, every time we embrace the Torah, and you don't do it with a sigh. I'm going to do it, but I sighed. That sigh means something in our heart is lacking. Va'ahata es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha. B'chol levavcha. B'chol levavcha. Not with a crux. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to me. Not with a sigh. Not with I'm so tired. Another tefillah. Another tehillim. Another mitzvah. Another this. Like, I just want to go to sleep. Chas v'sham. Because Adam osa mitzvah yasana b'chol lev. Because if Reuven would have known, he would have carried the boy home. And if Aaron would have known, he would have made a parade. And if Boaz would have known, he would have given her fat and calves. So today, what should we keep in mind? What should inspire us? So the Midrash says, you know what should inspire you? You know who's writing down what you do? It's true. Scriptures, Tanakh, Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim is closed. There's 24 books, that's it. But someone's writing it down. You know who? Eliyahu and Melech HaMashiach. Because every act we do, who's Melech HaMashiach? The sign of Beis David. When is David born? On Shavuos. When did he die? On Shavuos. When do we read the story of how he was born? His great-grandparents, Rusim Boaz, on Shavuos. Who will come to redeem us? Mashiach ben David. You know who's writing down when you do something good? Eliyahu, a Navi Zachor L'Tov, a Melech Mashiach. And every time we do an action, they write it down. And who signs it? Who's the witness? Who's the Eirei Kedushin? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chosem Al Yadehem. The Almighty comes and he says, I am the witness. That Bas Yisrael, that Ben Torah, that Jew did it with your whole heart. And you give up your bed for the Panovich Rav, how do you give it up? I'll go up, who could I say no to the Panovich Rav? I'll go upstairs with a kracht. My mother asked me to do something, how do I do it? When the Ribbono Shel Olam asked me to do something, how do I do it? When you do something, says the Midrash, Yasenem Belevav Shalem. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, Va'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha. How do I engage in that love of God? Or with a passion, with a fire. Who writes it down? Eliyahu and Melech HaMashiach. The sign of Beis David. And Hashem signs. And with this, we will be zocha to the ultimate geula. The geula shlema, by Mashiach ben David. We'll have so much accumulated, ma'isim tov, and mitzvos and chasadim, that Kadosh Baruch Hu signed as the guarantor. And he will finally come to redeem us with the ultimate gula. I wish you a wonderful, meaningful, uplifting, Torah-filled, full-hearted Chag HaShavuos. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a wonderful Yom Tov and a good Shabbos.